In this episode of Fictional Hangover, we discuss alternate histories, avoiding headlessness, and automatic horses in My Lady Jane by Cynthia Hand, Brody Ashton, and Jodi Meadows. Automatic horses. Yes. As you run alongside of it.
Hey everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series and authors, and is full of spoilers. I'm Claire.
And I'm Amanda.
You sound really resigned to the fact that you're Amanda there.
I know, I'm sorry, I was just thinking of
running
horses.
Running alongside the
source. It's fine.
Let's do that again. One take.
Okay.
I'm Claire.
And I'm Amanda.
And today we're going to discuss My Lady Jane by Cynthia Hand, Brody Ashton, and Jodi Meadows.
Standard disclaimer. If you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read or listened and don't want to be spoiled, stop listening to us and go read or listen to the book and then come back. If you haven't done this but want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just love the show so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up.
Yay!
Yay! It's a real episode again! Yay!
An actual book.
An actual book, a real discussion.
You might not go crazy in the edit. I mean...
Oh, I mean, I probably will, but yeah, less crazy. Standard. Less crazy this time.
Less, very, very much so.
Yes.
Right, so I'm going to ask you, I'm just going to jump right in. Did you find anything random, some scary interview stuff, or... background information that we just need to know?
Well, I really just want to share that we know who wrote who in the book, which could be a mystery. It seemed to be a mystery in all the investigations that I did. On their own website, they didn't mention who it is. Yeah. Like, oh, you just have to guess. So I just want everyone to know that we found it out by harassing Jodi Meadows on Twitter. So, what?
We don't harass anybody on Twitter. How dare
no,
you?
No, yikes. So, we learned that she wrote Jane, Cynthia Hand wrote Edward, and Brody Ashton wrote Gifford.
Love it.
Secrets.
Love it. Love it. Love it.
It's pretty good.
It is. It is. But it's kind of like, you know, I need to know about all the puns that are going on and all about the different references, because I'm quite convinced... I've picked up a reference, but I'm not entirely sure. Because how many people would name a horse Wesley? Unless somebody who really likes The Princess Bride.
Right,
and, you know,
so...
Frying pans
I wonder if
Tangled. It'd be really nice to be able to find this information out. But I don't want to overly harass people on Twitter personally. And we know that at Fictional Hangover on Twitter, our podcast Twitter handle has gained sentience. And often just goes off and does its own little thing. It's difficult to wrangle in and go, can you please find this information out?
Yeah, in a reasonable, not stalkerish manner.
Yes, don't threaten people again, please.
No, it's bad.
Yeah.
Threatening is bad. Sometimes good things come from it, though.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to say what.
No. Mwah! Sorry.
So... what are your initial thoughts on this book?
Freaking love.
Because we're having a real conversation about a real book this time.
It's a book, okay, that I've read / listened. I freaking love this book. It ticked all the right boxes for me. I was like, yes, yes. The audio narration is chef's kiss. And it was so funny. It was very British in its humour. And there was just pop culture references coming out of the wazoo. So yeah, I absolutely adored it. Regardless of keeping falling asleep to it. But then...
I was so worried. I was so worried when you texted me that. I was like, oh great, I've picked a terrible book and she hates it and our discussion is going to be awful and we should just throw the whole thing away and start over.
No, it's because I was only getting a chance to listen to it at like 2 o'clock in the morning because of current circumstances. I don't have the same amount of time during the day to listen to audiobooks that I used to have. So it is literally as I'm in bed doing whatever, Animal Crossing now, that I'm getting any opportunity to listen to the books. So, yeah, it was 2 o'clock in the morning and I fell asleep. But thankfully, I put the nighttime timer on, so it was only an hour and I'd already bookmarked my place so I could find the place again. But yeah, I just kept falling asleep to it and it was killing me because I'm like, it's so good, it's so funny. It was vex I was vexing myself.
Oh my gosh,
What
I'm so
about you? I
worried.
mean, I know you were so worried, but what about you? This book is actually a suggestion that you made.
Yes, I made this suggestion. And you know, when it first came out, I got it in a subscription box, Owlcrate, I think, years and years ago, and I gave it away.
Really?
Like, I didn't have in like I looked at the cover and I thought, "Oh, it's historical fiction. This is not my thing. I'm going to give it to someone who I know will love it." And like, did I not read anything about it? Did I not like open it and look on the inside and see all the horse puns? Like, what was wrong with me? Because this book is perfect in every way, and I'm so glad that I finally got around to reading it or listening to it. But you know, trying to find books to fit our April theme,
Yeah.
hilarity ensues. I think this one, perfect.
Oh, it was.
Perfect choice.
Yeah, it really was. Like, hats off to you for picking this one. It's actually been on our to-do list for since I joined the podcast, and we made a list of books, and it was just finding the right opportunity because we were quite heavy in our paranormal and fantasy books for quite some time. But then it rolled on to Christmas, and then all of a sudden we're like, okay, we need to do a book club challenge. We need to do some themes. And then as soon as, obviously, it had to be April, we had to have something comedic. It just made absolute perfect sense. So yeah, no, thank you for putting this on the list, and I will and desperately listen to My Calamity Jane and My Plain Jane as soon as I can.
I mean, it's really perfect the way it happened. You know, sometimes when we read a series, we just discuss the first book, and sometimes we don't go through the rest of the books. But this one, you know, it's not a continuation. It's just another story written by the same authors with the same kind of theme. But, you know, like after reading this one, I just want to keep reading them, and it's very convenient that My Plain Jane fits in with our next theme, and then My Calamity Jane fits in with the June theme, and that's when it comes out. It's just like serendipitous magic,
It's brilliant. It's
and
truly
I'm
is, isn't
really
it?
excited about it.
Yeah, and it's good to
Yeah,
have
it's
something that's
perfect.
not. I mean, I say it's good to have something that's not life or death, but hello, Lady Jane Grey. She was queen for 9 days and then beheaded. It is very much a life and death situation.
It's very life and death.
It's very life and death, but obviously, that's not what happens. Spoilers. And it's nice just to have something that is not so deathly serious. Not something that is too post-apocalyptic dystopian kind of, it's just something that's going to remove you from reality but give you a good dose of happy.
Yeah, and it's also very nice because it does not take itself seriously either.
God, yes.
There's a
It's
lot of breaking the
so
fourth wall and
self-deprecating.
like ridiculous comments added in. It's
Yes.
perfect.
It knows exactly what it's doing. And we did re say to Rhonda at Pop DNA Podcast and Rhonda Blog's books that we were covering My Lady Jane, and she has since listened to or read My Calamity Jane. I saw her post, and
No,
she's
that's not out yet.
no, what is it? She's list no, it's one of them she's listened to. It's My Plain Jane that's not out,
Calamity Jane's not out
which
yet.
is the one that's it. She's definitely watching or reading one of them.
The Jane Eyre one? My Plain Jane?
Possibly My Plain Jane.
Because Calamity Jane's not out yet.
That must be my
Unless she got
bad.
an arc of it. And then if she got an arc of it, freaking give it to me, okay?
Can we
She
threaten
doesn't live that far away from me. I will track her down
and
and
keep
get her to hand it to me
a reasonable
from 6 feet
distance,
away.
poker with a longmore handle?
Or a pool cue. I'm just taking everything that I learned from reading and watching 5 feet apart
Hang
and
on.
applying it to my life now. So, shall we get in? Shall we get into it? Shall we do it?
Yeah, let's do this.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Let's get there.
King Edward is dying of the affliction. At age 16, he has barely begun to live. He's never even kissed a girl. But all the signs are there. The coughing blood, the tiredness, aches, pains, and no second opinion will change it. He must put the country first and consider his successor. His eldest sister, Mary, thinks she will automatically inherit the crown. She is a verity, or a regular human, with a deep hatred of Ethians, those who can change into an animal form. Edward's father, King Henry VIII, was a notorious Ethian lion who would get so angry his form would change, and most likely the court would be less a jester or minstrel. Lord Dudley, the advisor to the king, cough, obvious, bad guy, cough, cough, suggests Edward's cousin, Lady Jane Grey, marry his son and take the throne. After all, the Greys are next in line to the throne after Mary and Edward's other sister, Bess, and Mary and Bess were declared bastards by their father, so, you know, there's that to consider, too. Plus, Lady Jane sympathizes with Ethians, which is important if she is to marry Lord Dudley's son. Hint, hint. That she doesn't take. That no one mentions. She and Edward used to pretend to be able to change their form during their childhood, though neither could. But now she has read all about them and thinks they deserve all the same rights as everyone else. Edward reluctantly agrees to sign the papers to wed his best friend slash cousin Jane to Dudley's son, Gifford, and make Jane his heir. P.S. Gifford is an Ethian. In fact, he is a horse. Doubly, in fact, he is a horse all day long. And he is my absolute favorite.
Breathe. Jane is getting married! Wait, what?
Yeah!
Jane isn't paying attention to her mother. She's reading, for God's sakes. I mean, come on. Lady Grey is reading a letter decreeing that Lady Jane Grey shall marry Lord Gifford Dudley on Saturday. What?
Yeah. Saturday?
Yeah.
Very soon.
You okay? Jane has had a succession of fiancés, all of whom have eventually fallen destitute. Never had she been so close to actually getting married. Like hell. Jane takes a carriage to Dudley's estate to at least meet the fellow she is meant to pledge her troth to. When she arrives, Gifford is nowhere to be seen. Only his older brother and the Dudley knows. Shudder. And a field of glorious horses. While Stan, the elder brother, blathers on about his younger brother's knightly pursuits and conquests, Jane's ire is growing. This will not do. The wedding must not go ahead.
Gifford, or G, as he prefers to be called.
Call me G.
Is a horse. At least he is a horse during the daytime. When the sun goes down and he turns back into a man, he receives a summons from his parents. His father has returned from court. That's odd. And his parents are together? Oh, this can't be good. They break the news of G's impending marriage to Lady Jane Grey. Though G protests the union, I mean, she might be hiding some ghastly disfigurement behind those books she's always reading, his father will hear none of it. Will he smell it, though, with his giant nose? Maybe. The date is set, the wedding is booked, the flowers have been picked out. Unable to believe this, G heads off to his dalliances. And by dalliances, we mean to compose and perform poetry. He's delightful in every way.
Oh, there's nothing wrong. Edward is asserting his dying kingly right of having dessert before the meal, as he should. Not wearing all the heavy, stiff clothing, as he should. And having his dog pet with him at all times, as he should. Jane comes to call on him. She doesn't know that Edward is dying and is shocked to see him looking so ill, which kind of bends her sympathies. He impresses the need for her to marry so that she is protected. Jane is not happy with the match. She doesn't want to tie herself to a debaucher, but there is some miscommunication when Edward realises she doesn't know that Gifford is in fact a horse. Edward impresses upon Gifford that Jane must know before they consummate the marriage.
This makes me laugh so much.
Oh, gosh.
Jane traveled to Durham Castle, the Dudley estate, with her mother and lady-in-waiting, where she was poked and prodded into her wedding dress. The event was not the joyous occasion that a love match would be, and there were no books to read. But on the positive side, Gifford's nose is normal!
Yes!
Until he develops a long face. Thank goodness.
Nay,
thank goodness she did not have to fear losing an eye during the inevitable kiss. In fact, the whole of Gifford was very pleasing to the eye. Well, good for him and his dalliances.
G is not happy. His wife is beautiful. How dare she? How can he tell her that he's a horse? How?
It's not hard.
It's not hard. Love, I'm a horse. I mean, you know. Instead of doing the right thing, he gets drunk and properly passes out in their bedchamber, mumbling, "Woof." Obviously, Jane does not hear or understand this, because when Gifford awakens the next morning, feeling rather worse for wear and promptly turning into a horse, she is considerably surprised, to say the least, and angry. How dare he not tell her? How dare Edward not tell her? How dare Gifford not turn immediately back into a person and talk to her? Men.
Can I just say, when you said feeling rather worse for wear, I just wanted to say feeling rather horse for wear. That's not a very good pun.
Cause... That came 10 minutes later.
Edward is being looked after by his physician, Boo Boo, and Lord Dudley. His condition seems to be worsening, but maybe the wedding was too much for him, or maybe there's something in the whispering the two of them keep having in the corners, the looks they cast him, and the fact that Pet will not let him eat the meal they have delivered. Oh, hey, it turns out that Pet is not a dog. She is, but she is a human who can become a dog. And she's very protective of Edward. And you know what's weird about that? That she can turn into a human? Edward was very recently rubbing her belly. Pet's father, Peter, is the kennel master, and it turns out that most, if not all, of his children are Ethian dogs in the kennels. Pet is there to protect Edward, as her family has done for pretty much their entire lives. Aw, Pet.
You know what? The physician was like, Boo Boo. I mean, am I hearing that right? Is it Boo Boo?
Boo Boo.
So when I wrote it down, I was like, it sounds like Boo Boo. I'm just going to write Boo Boo.
I mean, it's because he got a Boo Boo, right? When he was a child, and then the physician fixed him. So obviously the physician is called Boo Boo. It's terrible in the best way.
Do you know the silly thing that I said? When you hear Lord Dudley go Boo Boo, I imagine Jafar from Aladdin, because the way in one point he does
Prince Abubu.
Yes.
Ababwa. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Thank you. Jane is not particularly bothered that her husband is an Ethian. That was quite exciting, really. What does bother her is that no one saw fit to tell her. Likely her mother didn't know, but Edward should have said something. So off to see Edward she goes, still in her wedding dress. But the guards won't let her see him. Orders are the king is not to be disturbed. When Jane returns to her chambers with Gifford, he is still there, in horse form, granted, and asleep, standing up. Because that's how horses sleep.
Having shit all over the place.
Oh, yes.
Because that's what horses do.
Yes. But, the bright flash of light, he's suddenly a man. A very naked man. Jane mm-hmm. and Gifford verbally duke it out. You know, their frustrations and their ire. They are married and they are going to go on the honeymoon. There is nothing to be done about that, but it doesn't mean that they have to be happy or indeed quiet about it. During the argument, G gives Jane rules for his equine state. 1. No riding the horse. 2. No bridling the horse. 3. No saddling the horse. 4. No horse jokes. In rebuttal, Jane gives G her rules. 1. No touching her books. 2. No chewing her books. 3. She should never find hair in her books. And 4. No bending the spines of the books. Rules officially in place. They then set off on their honeymoon.
Whilst travelling in the coach, they come across a pack of wolves attacking a village for their cow. Jane wants to help and dashes from the carriage. G is reluctant. There's something odd about the situation. Men are running with the wolves. A child is hurt during the attack and the cow is lost. This is the third cow lost in a week to the pack. Jane resigns herself that there is nothing she can do to help and they continue on. But she is not happy with G because he didn't do a damn thing.
When they arrive at the estate, Jane calls out Gifford's cowardice. But these were not ordinary wolves. These were the infamous pack. Jane, who, remember, is well read on the subject of Ethians, does not believe it, but G insists that it's true. Jane then declares she knows how they shall spend the night. Gifford gets a little excited and starts to undress.
No, my friend, the people of the village.
They take food, medical supplies, and they head back to the village dressed in their plainest clothes to tend wounds and help feed the village. When they return, they're both exhausted, but at least have found a new respect for each other.
Lord Dudley persuades Edward to make Lady Jane his heir. It doesn't take a lot, considering the alternative is Mary. Mary and Bess had come to visit him, and Mary tries to feed him some pudding, which Pet would not allow. Bess, on the other hand, leans in and whispers that she will help protect him. Et tu, Mary? Pet continues to sniff all his meals now for, you guessed it, poison. Edward knows that Mary and or Lord Dudley are trying to kill him to take the crown, but surely they aren't working together. Edward's nursemaid is the one who's delivering the poisoned food, so he can no longer trust her, especially now that she's putting it in all of his food, not just his delicious blackberry puddings. Because he's been poisoned so much, he's very weak. Lord Dudley or Mary have obviously become impatient as there are guards approaching his chamber. Whilst Pet tries to keep the guards at bay, Edward wishes desperately that he could fly free of all of this and turn into a bird like his mother could. And hey, he does. And he escapes.
Jane and G spend some days on their honeymoon in quiet contentment. Jane reads to the horse, G, and at night they help the local villagers with food and medicine. The honeymoon is disrupted, though, by the king's guards, who have come to take Jane to the Tower of London. Unsure as to what is going on, Jane, G, some snacks and a book are thrown into a carriage. When they arrive, Lord Dudley reveals that King Edward is dead. Long live Queen Jane. In complete confusion and disbelief, Jane is whisked off and coronated without any ceremony or fanfare, as usually befitting such an occasion. It also seems to G that his father has designs on controlling the new queen, with a subtle wording, while Jane believes that they can do great things for the people with her new power. Mary, however, hasn't seemed to be informed of Edward's line of succession decree. Ugh, awkward.
Ooh.
And now there is a threat that the popular aristocrat will come to take power. Family.
Edward, meanwhile, is flying through the air. He even enjoys devouring a mouse or two. The freedom is wonderful. Not knowing where he is, less so. Falling from a tree and hurting his ankle makes him realize two things. One, he has changed back into a man. And two, he is naked. After being screamed at by a woman, calling him a pervy Ethian, Edward flees again in bird form and takes shelter in a barn, where he meets an enchanting Scottish lass. Her name is Gracie. She's an Ethian too, and apparently a chicken thief, because they run from a very angry farmer. On the lamb, Edward admits that he is, in fact, Edward Tudor, and was being poisoned by Lord Dudley, his advisor, and he needs her help.
Ugh, being queen is boring and heavy. The clothes are awful. The bedchamber's heavy. Full of wardrobes with no bookcases in sight, and Lord Dudley won't leave her alone. Jane doesn't know why Edward made her queen, but she wants to see his body and say goodbye at least and arrange a befitting funeral. Lord Dudley, however, keeps putting her off. At dinner that night, Lord Dudley mentions having picked out a crown for Gifford and they should arrange his coronation for the following night. Jane protests. Rather too loudly, which embarrasses Gifford. Weren't they supposed to be a team? In her chambers, they have a screaming argument. G thinks there's nothing wrong with him being king. Jane insists that a king who spends his time as a horse during the hours actual rule takes place makes no sense. She is convinced Lord Dudley mechanised her coronation to put his son on the throne. As teenagers are wont to do, they stomp their feet, they slam the doors, and declare they will never speak to each other ever again.
G is mad. He doesn't want to be king, but now that his wife is queen, why shouldn't he be king? Yes, her arguments are sound and reasoned, but why does she have to be so unreasonable? Nay, G thinks. Nay, 1,000 times nay. He's cantering around the field, working out his anger, feeling inferior and powerless, and, you know, he doesn't want to be that way. He thinks about how he and Jane compliment each other and learn from each other. He composes poetry over her lips. After the sun goes down and G changes back into a man, he goes home, wondering if it will be his wife that he is greeted by or the queen. Jane is alone in the dining hall, and they discuss their days, his eating hay, hers with court business, his alone in a field, hers being stuck with his father until he was called away on urgent business. G considers telling Jane about what he heard the night of her coronation, that Mary doesn't accept her sovereignty, but decides against it, and to defer to his father. What a wiener bag. When it becomes clear that it is his queen sitting with him at the table and not his beloved wife with poetic lips, G becomes disinterested and they part, each going to their separate rooms, and they don't see each other for several days.
G has taken to wandering further and further from the castle during his horsey hours. On the 8th day of Jane's reign, he regains human form a fair distance from the castle and is completely naked. They spent a long
so
time
much
naked.
Nakedness.
Yeah.
So much nakedness.
Fashioning some leaf vines over his delicate parts, he soon finds a tavern called The Three Ladies. Acting as if nothing is wrong, he enters, makes a distraction, and leaves through a window, now with someone else's clothes in hand and leaving stories of ghosts behind. In another inn, he hears whispers of long live Queen Mary from men in uniform and spots a light on the hillside, an encampment, and so close to London. He races home on 2 feet, bursts through Jane's bedroom door, and gasps out everything. They call for the Privy Council, but they refuse to come, even though outside the castle is an army. Mary's army.
Edward and Gracie have been trudging north through rain and mud for days. They've spotted soldiers on the road carrying Mary's banner, making Edward desperate to reach his grandmother. But he refuses to change into a kestrel and ride on Gracie's fox back. That's right, she's a fox. That's why she was stealing chickens, because she's a fox. Still recovering from being poisoned, Edward feels awful and needs to rest. Gracie transforms into a fox, and Edward is left alone to think about how foxy and foxy she is, and how, you know, he wants to kiss her. When Gracie returns, she brings him new socks and a rabbit for dinner.
So romantic.
So romantic. Edward admits he doesn't know how to look after himself because he's never had to do it before, what with living in a gilded cage, always preparing to be a king and never actually being one. They discuss how Gracie knew she could change into a fox and their journey to his grandmother's house. But then Edward has a seizure. Even though he's been away from the poisoned food, he's still ill and still dying. To make the journey quicker and easier, he gives in, changes into a kestrel so that Gracie can bind him to her and run swiftly as a fox to his grandmother's house while he is unconscious.
Edward awakens to find himself in a soft bed and room with his sister Bess and his grandmother. His grandmother is a stern woman, let's be generous. Who wouldn't let anyone poison her when she was queen?
How dare you?
How dare
you? Will not poison me.
She is.
How dare you let
all,
someone poison you?
You know, Henry VIII's mother. So, And she's given Edward an antidote. Yay! Bess explains to Edward that Jane was crowned queen and that Dudley was coming for her and Mary to lock them up in the tower. She slipped out when she heard them coming and Mary escaped to one of her estates. From there, she raised an army with the Catholic Church and took the throne that very morning. As it happens, Mary had been plotting Edward's demise separately to Dudley's mechanisations, but found out, after overhearing a conversation about an extra ingredient in his blackberries, that Dudley was also planning his death. That's gotta suck. Your sister and like, your number one advisor are like, plotting to kill you.
Yeah, it's terrible. When Mary's army arrived, there was no battle for the throne. She went straight to the throne room and sat down on the throne with a crown on her head. Jane's mother was there in court, and Dudley was also there, front and center. As Mary monologues about true lines of succession, etc., paying no heed to Jane's protestations, the sun comes up and Gifford turns into a horse. Mary wants Jane to accept her as her queen and denounce evil, to reject her husband and all the rest of the Ethians, and if she does, she will be sent to a monastery for the rest of her life. And Gifford will be burned at the stake the next morning. Jane rejects Mary's offer. She can't turn her back on the one person who had supported her without question.
So, Jane is taken into a bare room where she dwells on being her last hours and what will happen at the execution block. She thinks of G and feels guilty for not crowning him as her king. Lady Frances, her mother, visits and explains to Jane that Dudley declared himself a verity and made it sound as if he was clearing the path for Mary to take the crown. She begs her daughter to do the same and take Mary's offer, but Jane can't. She can't reject Ethians, and she points out that her mother is one too. When the guards take Lady Frances away, Jane sinks into a dark depression, but suddenly everything goes white. Now everything feels wrong. And the room is bigger, she's shorter, smells stronger. Jane has changed into something. She's an Ethian! Woo!
Woohoo!
What is she?
You know what she is? Able to sneak out of the room.
Ah, that's good.
She's not very graceful, though. Their hindquarters are seemingly autonomous. Her sight isn't great, but her sense of smell and hearing are astounding. At the bottom of the stairs, she overhears Dudley and someone she thinks is the physician talking about a body that will do for Edward. They hadn't found his actual body. But, you know, he was poisoned and starved, so it's really only a matter of time before his corpse turns up. So it seems, to Jane, that Edward may actually still be alive somewhere. She escapes the building and goes in search of her horse.
Gifford is dwelling on being burned at the stake. He's seen a stake burning before, and it wasn't pleasant. He was also thinking about Jane and how she'd stood up for him. That was nice. She would die in the Tower courtyard. He would be burned on Tower Hill, where all the convicts died. As he is composing very bad poetry with Jane's name, a letter in Jane's handwriting is slipped under his door. But it's just the letter she wrote Edward written the day after their wedding. Ah, but it is written in her hand. Oh, so you will cherish it until his last breath. Wait, in the corner there's something. A word? It's written in a different hand? The word is skunk. Eh?
Later that evening, G hears a scratching sound. Upon investigation, he discovers two beady little black eyes attached to a long, awkward, furry body that jumps out at him. Not screaming like a little girl at all. Yeah, right. G takes a step back. I feel like it's not a screaming, it's more of a whinnying. The creature climbs onto the bed, and as he's about to slam a book on top of it, the rodent, not rodent, becomes fascinated by the book. Egads! It's Jane! But what is she? Oh, that doesn't matter. Once he realizes that she can steal a key to help him escape, they have a plan. And he's bloody impatient to get started. They escape the Tower of London with some elegance, but mostly luck. Trying to pass the stables, they stumble into Peter Bannister, who identifies Jane as a ferret. Quickly mounting a horse that isn't Gifford, and following Peter Bannister's daughter Petunia, or Pet the Dog, they are off. Pet the Dog! Come on, Pet the Dog! so great.
It's just puns everywhere. It's just puntastic. It's
all over the place.
This is why it hits all about with spots.
So good.
Gracie and Edward are sparring, and Gracie is kicking his ass because she is bloody good, and Edward keeps being distracted by her tight trousers. Some Monty Python sparring later, Gracie proves how skilled a swordswoman she is. Exhausted, but feeling much better after receiving antidotes to his poisoning, Edward tells Gracie she doesn't need to stay now because she kept her promise to get him to his grandmother, and that he doesn't really know her. I know. She's Scottish. He is the English king. It's, you know, an unknown quantity. Anyway. And she might be a spy for her sister. Finally, she decides to tell Edward how she found out she could change into a fox. When she was 7, her family, or all Ethians, were locked in a cottage by English soldiers. They were all large animals, stags and deer, and they were far too big to escape. But she wasn't. She became a fox. Her father told her to escape to France and gave her a map, but on her way, she lost it and got herself lost. The pack found her and adopted her. Back then, they weren't as bad as they are now, and the new pack leader, Archer, decided to turn the tide, take control, and put a price on Gracie's head. 10 whole sovereigns. I have no idea how much that is.
I mean, probably a lot.
Yeah. It's pre-decimal. Who knows?
Yeah.
Next ensues some exceedingly uncomfortable mumbling about Moss, eyes, and loveliness. And just as they're about to kiss, his first kiss, his grandmother calls him in for his medicine. What an absolute block.
Can't be a cock block, though. No. Kestrel block?
Kestrel block?
Just kestrel blocking him.
Just a snog block, really.
Bird block?
Nah, I'm going to go with snog block.
Snog block.
He's the bird at the time.
It's true. But, I mean, the term is cock blocking, and he's not a cock.
No.
He's a kestrel.
But it doesn't refer to being a cockerel.
It's still the same idea.
Yeah,
come on, give me a break.
No, I can't allow it. Disallowed! Vetoed!
It's a shame. Edward meets with Bess and they strategize, looking over a map and their army numbers against their sister Mary's combined efforts with the Catholic Church. They contemplate getting help from the French army and their cousin Mary in Scotland, but help won't come cheap. They need to think of the many over the few, and with no word from Bess's Ethian Raven spies or from or about Jane, Edward decides he must go to France and petition for help.
Jane and G are fleeing the city, following whatever direction Pet as a dog leads them. Going through the woods with Jane still in ferret form, G proposes a plan. A good plan, he thinks. At sunup, he will change into a horse and they can continue to flee. And so long as Jane stays in ferret form, she will be light enough to be carried. Jane agrees. Well, she chitters at G when suddenly she transfers back into human naked form. Whilst G finds her inability to control a change after reading so many Ethian books and complaining about his lack of ability to control his change rather amusing, Jane is not amused. And, like I said, she's butt naked. She becomes alarmed when G starts to strip before he changes into a horse. Some shenanigans and breaking horse rules number 2, saddling the horse later, Jane breaks horse rule number 3, mounts her husband, and they are off.
Had to be done.
Had to.
After traveling for some time, they come across an abandoned cottage and barn. G turns back into a human, and they fling themselves into each other's arms. While Jane is squashed against G's chest, she feels a crinkle of paper. Her letter to Edward with skunk scribbled on it. Recognizing Edward's handwriting and remembering that her great-grandmother is a skunk, Jane realizes where they must go and that Edward must be alive. In her excitement, she turns into a ferret.
Oh. Pet is whining at the door to be let in, very excited about something, but G can't understand her. In a flash, a naked girl stands in front of him and exclaims that she has the king's scent. G is somewhat surprised that pet is a girl. I mean, remembering that pet said actual human words, they set off again following the king's scent. Pet is able to change at will and turns into human form to tell G that the smell is fading, so they must move quickly, and that he needs to sort himself out and change forms, and that Edward isn't travelling alone. It's a lot of information she spews out very, very quickly. They stop at a tavern for food, but everyone there is rather rough and smelly and very likely the pack. When Jane is spotted in ferret form, screams of rat and food come from the less savoury characters, and there is a scuffle. G and Jane manage to escape, but Jane is bleeding and very badly hurt.
Edward is vexed. Women! He's surrounded by stubborn, bossy women, a pretty girl who he keeps fantasizing about, who keeps wearing trousers and mocking him, and his best friend is missing. And now, there's a dog that won't stop barking. A dog? Could it be? Yes! Edward races downstairs into the kitchen to find Pet with his grandmother and a strange man stroking and fawning over a lump of bloodied fur. He realizes the man is Gifford, so the fur is... Jane? Yes. Edward finds out that Jane, too, is Ethian and badly hurt. But she can't turn back into a human for her wounds to be properly tended. Gifford watches Jane all night, and Edward takes over when G has to go outside at dawn to horse. Not even become a horse anymore. She's just going to go out to horse.
Jane is declared better by their grandmother, so it has to be true. And now the planning begins. How are they going to take back the throne? It's agreed, well, semi-agreed, with a lot of protesting, that they should go to France, where Edward will petition the king with Jane bearing witness. Before they go, they need to build the numbers of their army, so they decide to recruit the pack. There are obvious drawbacks and hesitations with this course of action, and Edward meets with Archer, the alpha of the pack, but he doesn't want help. He sees no benefit, and nothing in the Tudor monarch's past would suggest anything would change in Britain if they did. Edward confesses that he is an Ethian and wants to make all people equal. Archer scoffs and lays an impossible task before the king that he must complete if the pack is to join them. He must defeat the Great White Bear of legend. Okay. Though time is tight, the need for manpower is greater, so Edward agrees.
At sundown, Jane word vomits her research regarding bears to a dazed Gifford. Not because he's just transformed back to human, but because he's caught the sight of his wife's bare legs.
Scandalous, she's showing ankles.
So scandalous. Jane's advice was decidedly unhelpful as she was preparing to become a ferret. G tells her that she will not be coming bear hunting with them, and as she changes, he quickly puts her into a birdcage. Oh no, that was a bad idea. That was the wrong thing to do. Jane's going to be pissed. En route to the Great Bear, G and Edward have a bonding moment. Edward reveals that he fancies Gracie. G tells him he can't have Jane, so it's all good, really. When they reach the bear, it's huge. Absolutely gigantic. In a surprising turn of events, especially for G and Edward, they win the fight. The bear is not Ethian, and they are able to run a broadsword through its throat, though Edward does pick up a mild scratch, which, when they return to the castle, Jane is more than happy to tend to. Oh, is Gifford home? I hadn't noticed. Maybe you shouldn't have shoved me into a birdcage. Now, with the pack at their side, all they have to do is go to France and beg for assistance. Oh, no.
When they get to France, Edward looks like a king again, all dressed up and clean and, you know, heavy clothing. Jane looks of her station and Gracie is wearing a dress.
No, where's her trousers?
Oh my gosh. Egads. Edward asks Gracie to chat with Queen Mary of Scotland, his awkward ex-fiancé, which, you know, yikes. In order to try
his fiance, who was a baby at the time.
Yeah, well,
that's,
I mean,
the awkward part.
Yeah,
baby fiance.
It was all awkward, but still, it's still an ex-fiance. Think she's trying to sweet talk her into joining, as you know, one Scot to another. The meeting with King Henry of France goes well, both bemoaning upstart women and the audacity of Mary poisoning her own brother to steal the crown. It's simply not a done thing. King Henry agrees to help, and later that evening at a ball, Queen Mary of Scotland approaches Edward, confesses that she is an Ithian mouse, and will rally her Scottish soldiers to his cause too.
When Edward and Gracie are talking later, he confesses how much he wants to kiss her, but she can't stop remembering that he's the king, and so she runs off. Bess is impressed by the diversity of the new army that they have, French, Scottish, and Ithian, and decides that Edward will be a good king. But does he still want to be king? Jane and G confess that they only ever want to argue with each other, and as Jane can feel the sun going down, she realizes how desperately she wants to stay human with G and fights the change. And she can control it! Unfortunately, G can't. Even though he says he wants to stay with her and not become a horse, he doesn't care how much Jane tries to persuade him, physically. They're about to consummate their vows. And then Gifford turns into a horse. Nay! Bless him. Just bless him.
At the planning meeting, Jane gives them advice about sieges of London. There has never been a successful one. That's it.
Nope. The end.
Any other business? Mary has an army, but they're just standing outside the gates twiddling their thumbs. So, as Mary doesn't know Edward is still alive, Jane shall go in, find a way to sneak Edward in, and they will take the country back. Good luck, Jane! Sneaking in as a ferret, Jane is able to get into the tower and can hear the commotion outside, acting as a distraction while she breaks a window. Edward comes flying through the now open window as a kestrel. The plan to sneak him inside is successful. Yay!
Hooray!
Edward grabs his fire poker and Jane grabs a frying pan as a weapon, and so far, so good.
Gifford is waiting for them. Whilst bemoaning the fact that he did not profess his love to Jane, Edward and Jane come running up. Two tower guards intercept, but are quickly dispatched by Jane wielding her frying pan, a very underestimated kitchen implement. Pat comes running up too. Gifford grabs a sword for he and Edward, and Jane holds onto her frying pan. Time to get into the White Tower. As they enter the White Tower, Lord Dudley, Stan, G's older brother, and Edward's former weapons master, Dash, are waiting. While Edward fights the weapons master, Stan cheeses it, leaving Lord Dudley alone, who begs to be spared. Edward beats his weapons master and demands fealty. Lord Dudley takes a frying pan to the head and is tied up. Before entering court, G confesses his love and adoration to Jane. He lets all of his poetry tumble out, and as the sun comes up, he stays a man.
Yay!
Yay!
Edward enters the throne room feeling amazing. The siege is going well. He's beaten Dash, and Lord Dudley has been captured. Mary should just give him the bloody crown back. But she doesn't. Mary is indignant and self-righteous and so annoying. Sisters are so annoying. In her mind, the crown is hers. She was firstborn. She will bring the country back to its former glory. And in her rage at Edward, Mary loses control and turns into an ass. And an ass is how she will always remain. Edward then refuses the crown. He understands now that a woman can lead, and he abdicates to Bess. Or should we say, Queen Elizabeth Tudor?
A day or so later, Queen Elizabeth's crown has been stolen, and a certain Scottish pickpocket hasn't been seen. Edward goes out and finds Gracie. She is now alpha of the pack. Archer took an arrow to the chest 10 minutes into the siege. At last, Edward can kiss her, and boy does he. Jane and Gifford have a lovely wedding, or another one. This time, though, the wedding is during the day with their nearest and dearest. Aww. Jane thoughtfully provided books for each guest to read in case the ceremony got boring, but everyone was enraptured. They professed their love, the priests tutted their rushing the vows, and that night they consummate with a very special hug.
You see, when a mammy ferret and a daddy horse love each other very, very much.
Very, very much. They share a very special hug.
Oh my gosh, I love that book.
Yes, very good. It was very good. So good. So you like this book?
I loved it.
You like it? You didn't fall asleep because you hated it?
No, I didn't fall asleep because I hated it. I was vexed at myself for falling asleep because I was enjoying it so much. Bloody exhaustion, man. It's killer. I consider I have listened to it twice and enjoyed it both times round and giggled and found delight in the same parts in others as well. I think it's because it's so full of pop culture reference as well that you need to listen to it or read it twice to pluck them all out and go, ah, yes, that's Python, that's this, that's that. Yes, no, I very, very, very much enjoyed this book.
Good.
Antidote that I needed right now. Perfect pick for the Hilarity Ensues theme.
I agree. There were so many horse puns, and they were delightful. All of them were so great, and I love that all of them happened, or so many of them happened, when he was telling people not to make horse jokes.
Oh, that entire scene so where he's telling her off for doing horse jokes, and she's like, nay!
Why the long face?
Oh, yes, it's just so good.
So good. So good. That's my favorite. It's my favorite part. Just horse. All the forced to horse parts. It's my favorite.
Yeah.
Forced to horse.
Yeah, I like the bits with the grandmother. Because she's just... She's exactly what you would expect the grandmother to be. It was a little bit Fawlty Towerish. I don't know. Do I want to say Fawlty Towerish? I don't know. It's kind of like that old British sitcom to me where the brash old lady would suddenly come in, spout off a perfect line, and then leave the stage, and she would completely steal the show. And it got me. I am so surprised that the authors aren't British. Because it reads so well. Do you know what I find with this book? You know how with the murder mystery books that we discussed in March, so Truly Devious, Vanishing Stair, Hand on the Wall, and A Good Girl's Guide to Murder, we were like, yes, spoilers everywhere. We are going to tell you every little detail about everything because, whoa, we can't. And the evilness comes out. Mm-hmm. I don't want to reveal too much about this book because I want people to go out there and read and or listen to it because I enjoyed it that much. I'm kind of like, yeah, I really enjoyed all the horse puns. Yeah, I really enjoyed all the pop culture references, but I'm not going to tell you what they are. You have to go and find them yourself.
Yeah, you have to go and you have to read those horse puns on your own.
Yeah, because as funny as they are, and, you know, the way they've been written into the summary, you should at least get one or two in there.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, that is comedy, though, isn't it? You have to experience it yourself. A joke is not funny when it's explained. And I've got this kind of edge with this discussion. Like, I want to talk about it, but I feel really reluctant.
Like, I'll get it.
Yeah!
I'll get it, and it'll be funny for us, but everyone else will be like, why do they keep talking about horse puns?
Yeah.
It's not funny.
Yeah.
A horse pun is not funny unless you respond to it negatively, and you are a horse.
Exactly. It's like turning to people who are listening to this and going, why the long face? And we're like, and they're like, dorks. Do you know what I mean?
Everybody probably thinks that of us anyway, though.
Well, I think that is of us, but I think it with love in my heart.
Yes. So much love.
And a scathing tongue.
So good, though. I'm glad that we can love each other in such a hateful way.
Yeah. It's like when we just randomly start shouting at each other. We don't mean it with any kind of, you know, veracity.
No, never.
Why are we shouting? I don't know. I think I'm just on caps lock.
I'm just glad that you understand and you don't take anything that I say seriously, and I really appreciate it.
No.
Sometimes I think, like, was that really mean? No, it wasn't, because she understands me.
Yeah, I think there's been, like, not even a handful of times where we've said, I didn't mean that in a rude way. I didn't mean to be horrible. I hope you didn't take that with any offense.
Yeah, and we're both like, no, of course not.
Of course not, no.
Of course we didn't. No, of course not.
People.
Yeah, we're both awful. We're both awful people. And I love it so much.
Of course not, bitch. It's nice to be able to tell somebody to fuck off and they're like...
Yep.
Okay.
It's nice to just constantly be able to flip each other off and point our fingers down and it's just...
If we don't flip each other off at least once, what is the point?
I don't know. There's no point. Okay, let's get back to this. So... I'm with you, though. I don't want to tell all the horse puns. I don't want to say all of my favorite things. And it's right. You're right. It's because you have to read it. You have to be there.
You
had to be there.
What's the point in telling you about stand-up comedy afterwards?
I mean,
don't get me wrong. There are some British comedy programs that I do not like. League of Gentlemen. Don't know if you've seen it over in America. It might be a BBC America type program. I can't stand it. Mrs. Brown's Boys is horrible. I hate them. So I'll talk about them. Not like I've ever watched them, but like if somebody explains them back to me, I genuinely will have a chuckle. But if I watch it, I will sit there with a stone face and be like, "This is not funny." No, I don't know how this has won any comedy awards. This is rubbish. But then somebody's talked to me about it and I'm like, that's so funny. But this is genuinely a funny, good book.
It's genuinely funny.
Ignore the historical accuracies. Ignore the fact that nobody really gets beheaded. There's just abdications.
It's such a nice alternate history. It really is.
Yeah.
It's so nice to see, you know, Jane was queen for 9 days and then beheaded. But you know what? Now she gets to live a nice life with her horse husband. And it's delightful.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to say that's probably my least favorite thing about that. I wasn't that bothered by the pack. Like... That was a little bit of an aside, kind of.
Mm.
They didn't play that big a part for me, you know. They were very much in the background. So I wasn't that bothered by the pack stuff, but it's not as if it was, like, detrimental to the narrative. It wasn't like it was taking me out of the story or that it was completely useless. It's just, it probably was the weakest aspect of it. But yeah, I'm going to say my least favourite thing is I don't want to talk about it because I want you to read the book.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. The pack did kind of kick me out of it. And you know what I didn't like was the white bear quest. Like, that just seemed to be one step too far.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't enjoy it.
Well,
I mean, I liked that they listened to what Jane had to say and what Gracie had to say. Like, you know, they went in with a plan to defeat the bear and... They listened and they defeated the bear.
Yes. I liked...
Like, I could have done without that whole quest.
I liked it didn't last too long either. It didn't get drawn out. It was one chapter.
Yeah.
And it was done.
Yeah.
And that was good. But it was at the beginning of the book when Edward's saying, I've never been on the quest. I've never kissed a girl. I've never... And he basically tells you, I've never beaten Dash, my horse master, fencing master, at... In a spa, because he keeps forgetting that I'm the king and he needs to lose. He basically recounts the entire story at the beginning.
And he does, and it's cute.
It's cute, and I like that. That is kind of like, I like that kind of narrative. But it did feel like, we need a quest. What can we get him to do?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he mentioned quest, so he has to go on a quest.
Yeah. What's a quick, snappy quest that you can have?
Yeah. Oh, defeat a bear. Okay. They go and they defeat a bear and it's done. And now they can go on about their business.
And it's just a regular bear going about his regular bear business and they go and kill him. Yeah. I mean, if it was an Athian...
I mean,
it's one thing, because an Athian's conscious of being a bear, where a bear is just a bear.
Yeah. Like, is the bear, you know, is it a bad bear? Is he hurting people?
It's just a bear.
Did he deserve to die?
But then you're attributing human, like, thought process onto a bear. Not an Athian bear, a bear. Bears don't kill for just, you know, shits and giggles.
Yeah. Yeah, so I could have just cut that part out.
Yeah.
Edit that out, them.
Now
I can say
time.
It and people will understand. Yes. Create another alternate history.
What did you think about the French court?
Just a little That's an
I thought it was quite funny. I liked it. I liked the way that French King Henry was like, women, man, honestly, upstarts, try to take thrones, do this, do that. Do they have no respect if they're not know where they're from? And it's like, as a woman, and, you know, quite feminist, it's like, man, misogynistry. And then I'm laughing at myself, going, you should be more enlightened. It's a freaking king. Back in the 1600s, the word enlightened.
No, they
1500s
weren't.
1500s,
yes, they were not enlightened.
Yeah.
Who is your favorite character?
I don't think I just had anyone. I liked all of them for different reasons. I like Jane because you can see a lot of yourself in Jane. Being a bookworm and and I like Gifford because he was just so daft. And as much umbrage as he took to being a horse, no horse jokes, he wasn't serious about himself. He knew who and what he was during the day and during the night. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I can name any one particular kind. Like the grandmother, she's a life goal. I want to be that cantankerous.
I think I was gonna say, if you don't say that the grandmother is your favorite character, then you are lying.
Oh,
because I think the grandmother is your favorite character.
She's just everything about her, you know. Life goal, like I say, just cantankerous old woman who just commands the room. It's the dream. It's the dream.
One day you will be that. You will be that person.
It's like,
I can see it happening.
It's like, I can imagine, she hasn't given Edward any antidote for the poison. She's just given him a cup of tea and said, right, you're fine, you're better now. Sort yourself out. And he's like, okay, Granny.
you're right, I'm fine.
Orders him to health.
Yes. I feel like it's the same with Jane. They're like, oh, well, grandmother says she's better, so she must be. All right.
Yeah. We're not going to stitch you up. We're going to tend your wounds. We're not going to wash anything. Just you're fine. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she just wanders around. You know, she's the only Ethian character where, as a human, she has any of her animal qualities, and that just happens to be the stench. And I was like,
she's just off-putting. It's fine.
Yeah. But then you kind of think, you know, if you're going to have one quality, it might as well be the thing that's going to keep people away.
Yeah. Yes, I agree.
Be locked in a tower for 50 years.
Oh.
What about you? Who was your favourite character?
Gifford was my favourite character. I enjoyed his chapters the most.
Yeah.
Not to say that I didn't like all of the chapters, all of the entire book was fantastic, but I don't know, I just liked him. I like the sense of humor in those chapters.
Uh-huh.
And now we know who wrote those chapters, so maybe I should go and read some of Brody Ashton's work, if I love Gifford so much.
It's a good taster, isn't it?
It is. It's kind of like you know, that terrible book that shall not be named that we discussed at Christmas time. You just get, you get a little taste and you think, oh, you know what? This first story by Maureen Johnson was fantastic. And so is Maureen Johnson in every way, shape and form.
Yeah. Except this time, you know, it's taken a tweet to find out who has wrote what.
Yeah. But it's fine.
It is.
We learned.
No, I do really like, but I'm a massive advocate for anthologies as well, because you never know what you're going to find. Especially there was somebody I was talking to on social media who has just come out of a long period of study and hasn't read anything of their own choosing for like 4 years. What do I read? And everybody's trying to give them these wonderful books. And I was like, go with short stories and anthologies, because it'll get you back into reading and you'll find something that'll spark. That's what I did after doing my degrees, was read a lot of anthologies and short stories.
Yeah. I think I tend to fall back into a comfort read when I get into those sort of situations. Definitely. Like, I know that I should probably be reading something new, but I would rather read Daughter of Smoke and Bone again. I would rather read Strange the Dreamer again. I would rather read Finishing School again. I would rather read Harry Potter again, just because I know that I will love it.
Yeah. I'm very dangerous when I go and tidy up my bookshelf or decide to rearrange my bookshelf, that I'll start picking those books, those comfort read books off, and I'll just open the cover. Because I've read them that much, I'll start at page 100 and then just sit myself down and finish the rest of the book. Or I'll read until a certain scene happens and I'm like, yeah, I've got the warm feels, and I'll put it back, and then I'll sort something else out, and then I'll pick another book off the shelf, and I'll be like, oh, I'm lost again. This is why when I was a teenager it would take me at least 3 days to tidy my bedroom. I mean, it was a tip, but yeah, it took me 3 days because I was just buried in books all the time. Anywho,
now I'm just thinking of going back and reading my favorites again. I haven't read Finishing School in about a year, so I should probably pick that back up.
Yeah, I was thinking about going back through Gail Carriger's. I had start doing, I always, whenever I do an end-to-end series read, I always call them the Great and Terrible Series revisits. And I just finished the Finishing School, and I was going to start doing the Parasol Verse, the Tarabotti.
Mm-hmm.
But then some weirdo men like sent us a message and asked me to co-host for the podcast.
Sorry, that was me.
So I never.
That
got...
was me.
That was you. So I ended up skipping that in those and then going straight into the Custom Protocol, which I do not regret in any way, shape, or form. So I do kind of feel like going back. It's nice. I think you've got to. You've got to.
I've read Parasol Protectorate the least, so I need to probably read that one again.
They were the first ones I really, really hold a special place. But I always think, for me, I can reread a book very easily. Not all of them, I can very easily reread a book. And this, it's not because I need to know the mystery or I need the story to unfold, it's the feelings and the sense of comfort you get from those books, and you know exactly what I mean. And you can read loads of new books, and it's wonderful, and it's great, and you're discovering new authors and exploring new worlds, and it's beautiful. But sometimes you just have to go back home. It's like going on holiday for 6 months and then coming home to your own bed.
Yeah, gotta do it sometimes.
And you can edit all of that out and put it in the next blooper episode.
I don't know, it was kind of nice. But anyway.
Were there any surprises?
I was just surprised that everyone was at the end.
Oh my god,
like
yes.
Everyone.
Yes. Like,
I love it. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's just, oh, guess what? I need to escape, and I'm a kestrel. Guess what? I need to escape, and I'm a ferret. Like, oh, and you get so angry and you turn into an ass. And that's great. Like, it was so fantastic.
That was beautiful.
Oh, and you're a mouse. Like, everything. It's just.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
I mean, I know they said it's genetic. And let's face it, the British monarchy is everyone's very into bread. The entirety of the aristocracy are all cousins.
Yeah. It makes sense.
It does.
It's fine.
It does. But yeah, it gets to the point where possibly could we put this under least favourite moment? That it was too much.
It was a little bit much. But then, like, you know, you want everyone to have the magic powers.
Yeah, yeah. And everybody was the appropriate kind of beastie.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just shocked that, like, it just kept happening.
Yeah, but then, I mean, the thing is, though, they've justified it. They've said it's genetic and they're all into bread. And they said it happens during times of great emotion or stress or, you know, something sparks it. And at that time, they have very cushy lives. It wasn't until, you know, life or death situation that they've had to transform. Or, in the grandmother's instance, her son pissed us off so much she needed a spray with skunk ick.
Yeah.
Well, no, that was a husband. She sprayed her husband for finding out that he was cheating on her, and she sprayed him with skunk ink. Love that story, by the way.
I feel like I'm not saying much in this episode because I just keep, like, sitting back and thinking about, all of the fantastic things
that happened in this story. You are sitting back and just can't, you are looking off into the distance, and you've got this very reminiscent smile.
I've done it
on
so
your face.
Many times.
Yes, you have. It's like, oh.
So everyone just needs to go and read it. It's important. It's important that you go and read it.
Do you
want
to go and have a little moment? What is it? There you go.
Yeah. Thanks. Is it time?
I think it's time.
I think it's time.
It's time.
I also think it's time.
I too think it's time. All those in favour for it being a time, please say it's time.
And do you know what?
What?
We have someone else joining us today.
No.
Yes. And it's very special that she's here with us.
Tell me more.
Do you know who we have?
No.
Jodie Meadows.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, it's the real life Jodie Meadows.
I'm so ridiculously excited right now.
I know, me too. Fantastic. Lady Jane herself.
Yes!
Yay.
Oh my god, it's so true.
We're so happy. Oh, we've somehow convinced her to join us for Would You Rather. It's really great.
It was on Twitter.
This is why Twitter's a dog bowl.
I realized you wouldn't stop tweeting at me unless I said yes.
At last, gets on my reasoning.
Someone finally figured our pestering out. Hey!
That's how I got my agent. It's cool. I just kept sending her books until she said yes. So, you know.
Yeah.
Hey. If the method works, why change?
Don't change it. It works.
Yeah.
So, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Happy
to. Appreciate you. So, Claire, what's our first question?
Well, this is a question that we have also asked on our social media. So we do have some responses from our listeners as well. So we can give those a read out and you can decide if you like them or not. So, would you rather be able to turn into a horse, but only during daylight hours, or a ferret, but only during the night? So on Facebook, 32% people said horse. And 68% said ferret. On Instagram, 36% said horse and 64% said ferret. And on Twitter, 44% said horse and 56% said ferret. I just want to point out, I'm very surprised by that. I thought more people would actually say horse, purely based on a previous Would You Rather question about a horse. And everybody was like, oh, I love horses. They're such a majestic beast, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Nobody wants to be one, though, I guess.
I mean, if you have a job, it's hard to do it as a horse, maybe.
It would make the commute a lot quicker.
Yeah. And I mean, I think there are other jobs that you could get as a horse.
Plowing carts and
racing.
Equestrian.
Yeah. Making friends with other horses.
Yes. Pulling carriages.
Mm-hmm.
you could be one of those like living museum horses and just, you know, walk around and nobody's allowed to ride you, but you just like majestically look at me. Yes, I'm going to Poole Street. Watch me take pictures.
Right.
Happens all the time at the Living Museum I live near.
It seems like a pretty good gig, actually.
So you could also be a policeman.
Yes.
Police horse. Police horse.
Police horse.
Yes.
Yeah. Imagine that buddy comedy movie.
Yes.
Oh, it'd be so good. I think we should make it while we're all in isolation.
Okay, so before we answer, let's have a look to see what some of the listeners have said. So at Sucklord on Twitter went with ferret because ferrets are cute, and if I turn into a ferret at night time, that means I can sell my bed to make more space for books. And I can sleep on anything I want. Hee hee, always the practical way. Smiley.
Excellent. Yeah. Colin on Facebook said, you see, I wasn't sure which way I was going to vote on this one, but the GIF made my mind up. There's a smiling horse and a quick zoom in on a ferret face. Day horse all the way. I could run with my mighty mane flapping in the breeze, enjoying the sun. Then at night, I can just be plain old Colin and party it up with all the night ferrets. Good response.
So Colin is never going to sleep.
Nope. Okay. Horse all day, party all night.
Sure.
So Constance on Facebook says, night ferret means you can easily do the sneaky sneak. Rita Skeeter it up.
Excellent. And then Steph on Facebook said, ferret, because then I can be sneaky. Everyone is into sneaky ferrets. That's all they want.
Ferrets have a reputation.
But they're having so cute, though.
They are very cute. But having had ferrets for a long time, I can assure you, they are not as sneaky as they think they are.
So what would you be? Would you be a daytime horse or a nighttime ferret?
Oh, a nighttime ferret. Absolutely. I like sleeping, and ferrets are really good at sleeping.
Ah, that's a game changer.
Yeah. They sleep for like 18 hours a day.
That is definitely a game changer for me.
Yeah.
I would love to sleep. What's it
and
like?
They sleep in like the weirdest positions. I mean, they've got like the classic roly-poly position, but I've seen them like stretched out flat on their backs, just funny and weird. and like one of your listeners said, anything is a bed, anything. So
you might as well be a ferret.
Yeah,
Claire, what are you gonna be?
Ferret. I'm not a horse person. I'm actually a bit intimidated by horses. And even if I was a horse, I think I'd still be a bit intimidated. But, you know, I like the ideas of being of thinking I'm all sneaky and getting up to shenanigans. But you've won me over with the sleep anywhere at any time for 18 hours a day. That just sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
I would love to do that. What about you, Amanda?
See, based on our conversations of horse jobs, I want to be a horse now, and I want to have a horse job. I want to be a police horse or a living museum horse. I want to be a working horse, apparently. So that's what I'm gonna go with.
On the Netflix special buddy cop thing, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Stunt horse. You could be a stunt horse.
Could be a stunt horse.
You could be one of those movie horses where the actor inevitably buys you at the end, and then you just have a cushy life for the rest.
Yeah.
It happens all the time.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I'm going to be. I'm going to be a working horse.
Which actor is going to buy you?
Ooh.
This sounds weird. I'm so sorry.
No, fantastic.
This is the kind of questions we need.
Yes, this is what we need right now. I don't know. What if I was bought by like some rugged actor man like Hugh Jackman or something? Can you just like run through the fields with Hugh Jackman at your side? And then he would
at your side? Can he run that fast?
You.
Do you know how horses work?
I do know how horses work. Yeah. Yikes. What? But then he could be my buddy cop. He could be a good cop in a movie, right? I'm not gonna mention anything about being ridden by Hugh Jackman, okay?
There will be no riding the horse.
Right. We have to put the rules in place. There's no riding the horse. Oh my geez.
That went in exactly the right place for me.
I know. I'm really happy that it happened. Thank you.
I'm sorry. As soon as I asked the question, I was like, no. Get back in there.
No, stop it.
Realize the kind of questions we've asked each other.
Yeah. Things things go places and it gets really awkward sometimes, but it's fine. So, next question. Would you rather be a dalliancing poet or a member of the pack?
I don't know. Neither one. I mean, I suppose it would be a poet, except that I'm really not good at poetry. And I don't want to do, like, have all the dalliances and stuff. I don't want that in my life. But the pack seems like a
bit of a, like, quote-unquote dalliancing poet, because he really wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
Totally. Yeah, if there's, like, quotes around it, then okay.
This is your question to interpret however you want.
Oh, good. I want the one that lets me stay inside and pretend like I'm working.
No, you're definitely a dalliancing poet, then. It's fine.
You can just lock yourself in your room and go, an artiste is at
work.
That is
what I do all day anyway, and all night. So it works.
So you already are one.
Yes, except without the poetry. Thank goodness.
What about you, Amanda?
I don't think I like people enough to be a member of a pack. So, like you said, Jody, I'm not a poet. I can't even, like, pretend to be a poet, but I'm going to be a dalliancing poet.
Both words are
going to be in quotes. A dalliancing poet.
You see, I quite like the idea of being a dalliancing limericking poet, but it feels a little bit like court jestery style, if we're sticking with the era. I'm going to be a member of the pack, because you can still be a member of the pack, yet a loner animal, so you don't have to be, like, involved in the pack politics. You could be, like, the lone wolf or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to go pack. But, like, not be committee member. I'll just be, like, you know, off doing my thing. And then, you know, I'll pay my tithe into what I need to be. Like, you know, I'll pay my subscription fees, but that's about it.
All right.
That's a solid choice, yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay, next question. Oh, I love this question. Would you rather spray skunk spray? I don't know what the technical term is. At Henry VIII... or at Lord Dudley. It can be real, or it can be My Lady Jane, Henry VIII / Lord Dudley.
In the My Lady Jane world, maybe Dudley. I think it's going to have to say Dudley.
Why?
Just because he's terrible. And since he has such a big nose, I assume that he can smell it really well.
It'll really suck up all of the...
Yeah. I don't know that that's how it works, but,
no.
You know, if it's one-third my world, I can make the rules.
Exactly. It's your physics. It's your physics.
Thanks.
Yeah. that's probably what I would go with, too. Mm-hmm. Also, I would be afraid to spray skunk spray at someone who can turn into a lion.
Yeah.
And they might just, you know, transform and bite my skunk head off. So I think I'll go with Lord Dudley. You know, he deserves it. Mm-hmm. And like you said, with his giant nose.
Yeah.
It just makes it more poetic.
That's our kind of poetry. I mean, to be fair, Henry deserves it too. He's pretty terrible.
Yeah.
Henry is an absolute asshat.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
But Lord Dudley is a conniving son of a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't actually see Henry VIII in this book.
With being dead and all.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, throwing a spanner in the works.
I mean, that makes it less likely that he'll turn into a lion and maul your skunk head.
True. Are skunks very fast? Do we know if they're nimble?
I mean, probably.
I mean, I think they could scurry pretty quickly if they needed to, but I wouldn't call them fast, I think.
No. I think it depends on the situation. If I know I could get out of that situation, like, straight away, like, dart out of an open door and just be gone, mm-hmm. because Henry VIII is such an asshat,
yeah.
I'd be tempted to do it to him, and then he would just reek. But didn't he stink at the end of his life because of all the disease and rotten, you know, fat and everything? So has he not already been sprayed by skunk?
Yeah, maybe somebody got there first.
I'm desperately trying to remember my history lessons.
I don't recall any stories with him being, you know, sprayed by a skunk, but I haven't read a whole lot of history, so it could have happened, and no, I just missed it.
But he wasn't exactly the healthiest of fellows at the end of his life.
Maybe you'd be helping him out then, if you sprayed him with skunk spray. He might smell better.
Yeah, I'm going to give Henry VIII some eau de skunk.
Excellent.
I'm going to Pepe Le Pew him. And then skedaddle to a tower and never return for 50 years. And become a cantankerous old woman who shouts at her grandkids because that's a life goal.
Excellent. Okay, next question. Would you rather marry your cousin or a stranger?
Just so wrong.
It's a terrible question. Terrible.
Oh, history. Yeah, who read these questions?
Ouch.
It's a bit of a mix.
Yeah, that's a fair half and half, I think.
They usually go with, would you marry your cousin, dot, dot, dot? And then you're like, is this a literal question or would you rather thing again?
Not any of my cousins. Sorry, cousins, but, you know.
Ew.
I guess I would have to go with stranger, partly because of who I wrote in the book, and that turned out okay, and partly because of what happened in real life. Like, I knew my husband for 6 months before we got married.
Ooh.
So I guess I kind of did.
Perfect.
Yeah, that worked out.
I feel like
cheating,
it would. No, I feel like it would probably, in most cases, work out better if you marry a stranger than if you marry your cousin. Because if you marry a stranger and he ends up being terrible, well, you can get a divorce. But what if you divorce your cousin? Will your entire family hate you? Because clearly they're okay with it.
Christmas yeah. gatherings would be very awkward.
Right.
Or, you know, you go to a relative's funeral and you haven't seen each other for a while and you just have this argument over the casket.
Yeah.
It's like, you were really rubbish in bed. Well, like, you were frigid. It's like, this is not appropriate. And your cousins.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to marry a stranger too.
Yeah. Well,
it seems to be the way to go.
Happen all the time. And, you know, if there's not love, there may still be companionship.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Way to answer it nicely, Claire. Good job.
Or, in the case of my Lady Jane, they might be super hot.
It's true. They might be a super hot horse. It's fine. And then you can have a buddy cop comedy.
And then if you need a quick escape.
Exactly. Just don't.
You can run alongside of him.
Because that's how horses work. Oh, I'm going to have to send you a Wikipedia link to how horses work here.
I know how horses work. Okay, give me a break. What's our last question?
Would you rather be queen for 9 days or stuck in a tower for 50-ish years?
Oh, 50 years in a tower for sure. Do you know how much work I could get done if everybody was like, they couldn't get to me because I was in a tower?
And thought you were dead. So it's not as if you're going to get like mail through.
Right. So, I mean, as long as I got fed occasionally, it would be fine. I don't need to leave my tower.
You wouldn't even have to put up your poetry sign.
No.
you wouldn't care.
I could just write books and knit yarn. And when I was done with the book, I could just drop the pages out the window. I'm assuming I have a window.
We'll let you have a window. You can have a picture as well if you really want. You know,
thanks.
Artistic stimulation. Mm-hmm. You can even have a bookcase with books.
Wonderful.
Wi-Fi.
Yeah. That sounds really nice. And honestly, being queen sounds like a lot of work.
Mm.
Even for 9 days, it sounds incredibly stressful.
So if you're queen now, it's not as stressful because they're just like a figurehead.
Yeah.
They have no, you know, law making abilities. But back then, in, you know, Tudor times, you were the monarch, a proper monarch, and off with their headed things.
Yeah.
It's too much. Plus, you'd have an advisor who would inevitably be out to get you.
Mm-hmm. Or trying to marry you off to everybody. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want any of that.
And then everyone's like, well, who's your heir? Who's your heir? Well, shouldn't you have kids? And you're like, I don't want kids. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
I've kind of got this image of the tower from Disney's Tangled in my head, where you can't find the door, but there's a nice big window, and there's plenty of stuff you can do. However, there is a delivery service, so you're not stuck with the same 7 books, and you're not stuck with the same 3 paints. You know, you can crack through your TBR list. You've got Wi-Fi. It's all good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll live in that tower, sure. Let's all just cozy up in our separate towers together.
Yeah.
Okay, separately.
And if you don't feel like talking to anybody, you can have those cups with strings to communicate.
Yeah.
And you're making all the yarn.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got it.
Yes, I have the string already.
Yeah, so you just share that with us. Who's going to be in charge of cups?
I've probably got a few. I don't want to be stuck in this tower for 50 years. So it sounds glorious and quiet.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're all agreed on the tower situation.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Okay, good.
Married to our strangers.
As long as they don't have huge Dudley noses. Yes.
It's fine. It all works out nicely. So that was the end of our Would You Rather segment. Thank you very much for all of the terrible images that I now have in my head and all of the awkwardness that happened. I appreciate it. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you again a million times. Thank you.
Thank you.
So good. Is it time for life lessons now? What are the life lessons? I don't have any life lessons that are not a horse pun. just know that.
Well, mine aren't.
What about
great.
You? I feel like. Okay. What are your life lessons?
Probably as bad as yours. I've got two, I think.
What are they?
Never look a gift horse in the mouth. Don't go ferreting for trouble. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry.
Awful. It's awful. Awful.
Come on, then.
My final thought is a horse is a very stable animal. I didn't think of a good ferret one, though. Sorry. It's just. The horse meant so much to me. It's so bad.
I mean, you want to be a horse now, so it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. I want to be a horse and run free
Hugh
in my fields Jackman. With Hugh Jackman running alongside me, and then we have a buddy comedy. I don't think there's anything wrong with any of this.
No, I'm concerned by whose job is it going to be to attach the poop bag.
Could I do it while I'm a human?
There's a sizing
issue. Attach my own?
There's a sizing issue. I have concerns.
Well, you know, it's present day. And so I could, you know, it could be elastic or something, some sort of very stretchable poop bag material, and
just
put it on.
That is just such a cartoon. Whoop!
Yep, but then the poop bag is just perfectly right where it needs to be. It's fine.
Do you want some, like, really chic horseshoes attaching? Or do you want to go without?
I don't know. I mean, putting in horseshoes is weird, like actually nailing a horseshoe to the bottom of a horse foot is uncomfortable to me. But,
having watched
know,
it happen, it is, like, it looks like it's a very violent act. And what if you woke up, like, you know, when I say wake up, you de-horsify and you're human, would it still be in the foot? Because that's bad. You don't want that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would not be comfortable, because then it would also be on your hands. And you would just have, horseshoe hands. Yeah, so I'm going to have to say that I would prefer not to have horseshoes.
Okay, just so when you turn into a horse during a high stress situation, I know what your wishes are.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for taking my wishes into consideration.
Fine. Do you want your man doing anything?
You know, we had a bit of a conversation about this in our blooper episode.
I'm kind of thinking from, you know, like Zelda Breath of the Wild, where you get the horses and you can, like, play with the manes and change the colour. Do you want a bit of a mermaid style? Do you want a plaid? Do you want to go Mohican? You know? And would it stick?
Yeah,
would it stick if I cut your hair as a horse and you turn human again?
Would I have a weird choppy haircut? Yeah. Maybe.
You'd kind of
yeah,
feel
so
like...
let's just keep the hair long and flowing and luscious.
Okay.
And then it'll Yeah, let's keep it the same. Why are we talking so much about me becoming a horse? Let's go on.
Because it's a key aspect of this conversation. I feel like it's pretty central to everything.
Oh, man.
Anywho, right. Do you have an accent for me this week?
You know, I did not learn a specific accent for this time because I just feel like I need to be a very angry queen. And that will be my voice for this week. I'll just be a very posh and angry queen. That's what I'll be. How dare you? I am a queen.
Off with
How dare
head.
You get poisoned? Off with her head. Yes. That's going to be my accent this time. How dare you? How dare you allow yourself to be poisoned? I would never allow myself to be poisoned. So it's not really an accent. It's just a ridiculous voice that I put on, which I love to do voices, so it's fine.
Yeah, I accept that. I like it. It's probably as ridiculous as my British class accent.
Ridiculous as your own British accent are ridiculous all the time.
Sad truth.
I feel like I have jowls. Anyway, that's it. That's all I've got. That's all I've got
all
this time.
Need.
I didn't want to. Yeah. After last episode, the blooper episode fiasco of accent of the week, I feel like I needed to stop for a second. So I didn't want it to be too much this time. Just a nice gentle voice.
Just regroup. Let's regroup.
Yeah. So now it's your turn. If you liked this, try this. What you got for us today?
Well, there is a Goodreads link to Cynthia Hand's personally selected recommendations, which, if I remember, I will link up in the show comments. If I remember, I make no promises.
I mean, probably not.
I do try.
You probably forget.
If I do say I'm going to link, I do try, and I think I've hit it 9 times out of 10. But I have the memory of a sieve right now, so I don't even know what the day of the week is. Does anybody? So, this is...
I do. I know what day of the week it is.
It's Friday.
I have to know what day of the week it is, though.
Is it bin day?
Because if... I don't have that.
You don't have bin day?
But I know...
You don't know the day your bins are emptied?
No, because I live in an apartment complex, and it's... It all just goes to one place, and it's out of sight. So I don't see when it comes to be collected.
We not just need to know what day is. Tuesday for me, by the way. It's which bin will be collected, because it alternates.
Mm.
1 week is recycle, the other week is general. At least in my council, we only have the two. Some of the councils have a lot more and are better at recycling than my local council. And it vexes me. But that's by the by. So, summaries are taken from Goodreads.
Hold on. I have to tell you why I have to know what day it is. It's important. Because if I don't know what day it is, then our episodes do not get released. So I have to know what day it is. And let me tell you, there are some times when I have forgotten what day it is. And then I go, holy fuck. I have to put an episode up right now and I have to schedule it for release because I haven't scheduled it for release yet and it's not going to happen and then I sweat, but it's fine. Everything's fine.
It usually gets to Saturday night and I go, shit, we haven't got the would you rather question. Texting at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
Yeah, that's always fun. Oh, there was that one time where thankfully I messaged you and you went, no, Claire, it's tonight. I was like, we're recording.
Yeah. Hey, are you ready to record with this important person that we're recording with? What?
Yes.
I did not forget at all, I swear.
I'm not busy eating my dinner right now. Crap. Quick.
No.
Quick.
Fine. Oh. I feel like everything in this episode for me has been fine, and everything in this episode for you has been vexing.
Not everything, no. A chunk.
Anyway, I'm sorry. What are the summaries for the books you chose for us this weekend? Who knows?
Okay, who knows? All right, so the first one is Forks by Nadine Brandes. So the summary is from Goodreads. Thomas Fawkes is turning to stone, and the only cure to the stone plague is to join his father's plot to assassinate the King of England. Silent wars leave the most carnage. The wars that are never declared but are carried out in dark alleys with masks and hidden knives. Wars where colour powers alters the natural rhythm of 17th century London, and where the king calls for peace, no one listens until he finally calls for death. But what if death finds him first? Keepers think the igniters caused the plague. Igniters think the keepers did, but all Thomas knows is that the stone plague infecting his eyes is spreading, and if he doesn't do something soon, he'll be a lifeless statue. So when his keeper father, Guy Fawkes, invites him to join the gunpowder plot, claiming it will put an end to the plague, Thomas is in. The plan used 36 barrels of gunpowder to blow up the igniter king. The problem, doing so will destroy the family of the girl Thomas loves, but backing out of the plot will send his father and the other plotters to the gallows. To save one, Thomas will lose the other. No matter what Thomas's choice, one thing is clear. Once the decision is made and the colour masks have been put on, there's no turning back. And the second one is, I think Dracula as a girl, puts it me. An Eye Darkened by Kirsten White. So the summary, as taken from Goodreads, is no one expects a princess to be brutal, and Lada Dragwala likes it that way. Ever since she and her gentle younger brother Radu were wrenched from their homeland in Wachala and abandoned by their father to be raised in the Ottoman courts, Lada has known that being ruthless is the key to survival. She and Radu are doomed to act as pawns in a vicious game, an unseen sword hovering over their every move. For the lineage that makes them special also makes them targets. Lada despises the Ottomans and bides her time, planning her vengeance for the day when she can return to Wachala and claim her birthright. Radu longs only for the place where he feels safe, and when they meet Mehmed, the defiant and lonely son of the Sultan, Radu feels that he's made a true friend, and Lada wonders if she's finally found someone worthy of her passion. But Mehmed is heir to the very empire that Lada has sworn to fight against, and that Radu now considers home. Together, Lada, Radu and Mehmed form a toxic triangle that strains the bonds of love and loyalty to the breaking point.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the summary said, like, it's like a female Dracula, and it is, but... As a person who wrote her dissertation on the antecedents of Dracula, it vexes me no end when the Dracula...
See, you're vexed. You're vexed again.
I am vexed again. The Dracula legend and the Dracula legend are too intermeshed. Because it's not true.
Why did you choose to talk about this book then? You seem to not like it. Don't recommend when you don't like.
No, I do like the idea of it, because it's more historical based. And that's what I like. The historical aspect of it.
You know what, that's fine. You're vexed and it's fine.
No, I'm vexed that it's not this book. It's the generalness of when people are like, oh yes, he's definitely Dracula. No, basically the wood carving and that's it.
All right, well,
did you see Dracula Impale anybody? No.
Well, that's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire.
Join us next time as we discuss Renegades by Marissa Meyer. Contact us if you'd like to join us for an upcoming Would You Rather segment, or if you have any books to recommend. Also, be sure to look out for the next Would You Rather poll on social media, and don't forget about our book club and monthly challenges on Goodreads. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
At fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover, and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. And now on Goodreads at www.goodreads.com/fictionalhangover. And finally, a special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and on Patreon. Thanks for listening.